It almost finished verse 7 in the second chapter, where the servant of Boaz is answering Boaz's question concerning whose damsel this is, and he's explained who she was. And then in verse 7, we had started to look at that last week, and he talked about what she said. And she said, "I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came, and she continued even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. So we see her request here. We saw last week that there was this gracious, polite petition, in a sense, "Please let me," is one of the translations. And she knows that she has a right to ask, but grace is going to teach her not to be afraid to ask, which I think is so wonderful, and that's what grace teaches us. You know, Paul says, "Come boldly to the throne of grace." She was willing to admit her need, and in a sense, she's saying, as we said last week, I'll accept the crumbs from the table. You know, I'll just glean what's left. I'll accept the crumbs, and it's sufficient. And she's going to end up with more than the crumbs. So she came, and she came at the bidding of the servant. She came once he had given his permission. He's of the same mind as Boaz, in a sense. He's Boaz's servant. And the permission has been granted to partake of, in a sense, all that we find, and the promise is made that, you know, we'll be fed and nourished. So the servant is saying, here is the permission, and the promise is whatever you glean will be that which will sustain you. I just thought it so interesting that she was willing to come in order to receive the blessing. And if you get a chance to, you can go through the Gospels and look at all the different people that were willing to come unto the Lord and ask something of him. How many times in the Gospels do we find the leper that came to Jesus and asked for healing, or the woman that came to Jesus and touched his garment, or the centurion who came to Jesus for his servant, or the woman that was a sinner that came to Jesus and knelt before him and washed his feet. You know, think of all the people that came, and it's not our view, our lack of worthiness that should keep us from coming. It's the fact that we feel like we have nothing to offer but ourselves and our need that should cause us to come. And in that sense, she came because she felt her need and her lack, and that didn't hold her back from coming. And that's the way it is in the examples that we see throughout the Word. We saw last week that she asks to do this under the provision that was given for a stranger and a widow. And she knew her rights, and she was willing to lay hold of those. But if we're not willing to ask, he'll not be able to meet our needs. Kind of goes along with our study in James. She asked, and you know what? She didn't ask amiss, as James says in James 4:3. James says, if you ask and receive not, it's because you ask amiss. Well, she asked and she received because she didn't ask wrong, she asked right. And also James says, let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. Ruth did that. She asked in faith, please let me glean in your field. She asked in faith. What she's going to find out is God's going to give her more than she asked for. Same holds true for us. Then at the end of this verse, you see her labor, and you see she toiled. And she continued even until the morning until now. And then she tarried. She toiled and she tarried. That, or except, she tarried a little. So she continued. She didn't stop until now, until, guess what? The moment that Boaz arrives. It's not that she knew that he was going to arrive, but God did. She toiled until then. And when she continued, that just speaks of labor. I think hers was a labor of love. You know, the Apostle Paul uses that phrase in Thessalonians, the first chapter in 1 Thessalonians, I think it's the third verse, that there was a labor of love there that these saints had. Well, guess what? This was a labor of love for Ruth. She loved Naomi, and she labored for her. And through Naomi, she learned to love God. And through Naomi, she's going to learn to love God's people. She labored to give to Naomi, and in a sense, she's doing what the Apostle Paul tells us in the New Testament. We are to labor to give to those that are in need. Isn't that what she's doing? She labored with her own hands, which is something that the Apostle Paul tells us. We labor with our own hands, and her labor was not in vain. The Apostle Paul says that about himself. What I want you to think about as we go on to this next verse is Ruth's labor is a testimony of her purpose of heart, and it's a testimony of her love, and that's the testimony of the bride. And it is a labor that will be rewarded. Sometimes we look at our labor and look at the little things that we do that all in all in the perspective of the world seems so insignificant and, you know, never noticed, and yet it shows our purpose of heart, and it is a labor that will be rewarded. But she knew, what struck me is when to labor and when to not labor. She toiled and she tarried. She knew when to stop. She tarried just a little. Now, she didn't tarry a lot. It says that, or except, she tarried a little. The Jewish Bible and the Amplified Bible says except when she rested. She continued except when she rested for that brief moment, and it was just a little. And what struck me is she labored more than she rested. She labored more than she rested, but she knew when to rest, and she knew when to labor. She rested in the place that was provided for her, and in a sense, it's in a house of fellowship. She tarried a little where? In the house. That's a place of fellowship. It's a place that was provided for the workers. She was there with other workers. It's an opportunity to fellowship, for others to see her testimony. And so it's the house that others are in that are laboring, and it is a house of fellowship. But what I wanted you to think about is she labored, but she knew she needed to rest, and when she did, she rested. That's, I think, a hard lesson to learn sometimes. We get caught up in the labor, and I have done that. I've been out in the garden working, and Don will come out and say, "You want a drink of water? You look awful hot." And it's like once I get going, I don't want to stop. You know, you just want to keep going till you get it done. And and it's a hard lesson to learn, because she had in mind, I need to provide for myself. I need to provide for Naomi. I need to be a good testimony to these people so that they understand that I'm no longer an idolater. And so that she labored, but she did stop when she needed to. And she...
Apparently Jesus had to teach his disciples.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
He did. That's right. One of the hardest lessons to learn. But... what you see in that verse is that she, before she labored, she asked and she got permission. And the Lord does give us brief moments of rest before we go on to enjoy what will be a later rest. You know, the Apostle Paul says, when you look at the rest, and here it was just until, it was just a little rest. She tarried a little. But there are three things that the Apostle Paul says about rest. Well, more than three, but... the first thing that he says about rest is it's a reward. Rest is your reward, he says in Hebrews 4:11. Let us labor to enter into that rest. So rest is a reward. This was kind of a reward for her labor. She needed to realize that I deserve this rest. It will give me strength to go on and labor even better. And then the second thing that the Apostle Paul says about rest is it's appropriated. He says in Hebrews 4:3, for we which believe do enter into rest. Hebrews 4:3. So rest is something that you appropriate. You believe. And the third thing that he says about rest, and he says a lot more, but I just picked three, is rest is a promise. Because he says in Hebrews 4:9, I got all of these from Hebrews 4, there remaineth a rest for the people of God. It's a promise. So she, in a sense, began to enjoy the reward of that rest, and she appropriated it because it was made available for her, and I'm sure they told her at the beginning of the day, that place over there is a place that you can go to when you get too hot or too tired, or you need a drink of water, or it's time to rest and eat, a break for the day. She appropriated it, and it was a promise that was given to her that she laid hold of. She was a child of God, and she was given the same promise that everybody else was given, even though she was a Moabitess. So you see that wonderful attitude that Ruth has and her faith in that verse. Now we're going to go on to verses 8 through 13 where Boaz is going to speak to Ruth. And I got such a blessing out of verses 8 and 9. Boaz is going to, in a sense, begin to throw over his garment over Ruth and protect her even before she asks him to do that on the threshing floor. He's doing it already. Verse 8 says, "Then said Boaz unto Ruth, Hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field, neither go from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens." So he sees her there and he says something to her. Now, in a sense, he's giving three commands to Ruth in this verse. They're really gentle commands. They're requests, but underlying the request is this command that he's giving. If you will be my servant, this is what you need to do. And the three commands that he gives her when you look at this verse is, he said, "Hearest thou not, my daughter?" So what do you think that's a command to do?
Listen.
Listen. Yeah, it's a command to listen. And the second thing that he says is, go not to glean in another field, and neither go from hence. In a sense, I title that a command to be faithful. You need to be faithful. Don't go in another field, and don't leave this field. Be faithful. And then the third command that he gives is to abide. It is to abide. But abide here fast by my maidens. So looking at what he says to her, the first thing that he says, and this is kind of the foundation for everything else, because if she doesn't do this, then everything else that he says is not going to really matter, because she's not listening to the first thing that he says. He says, "Hearest thou not, my daughter?" Now, the way that that's rendered in most of the translations, the New American Standard says, "Listen carefully, my daughter." The Amplified says, "Listen, my daughter." The Revised Standard Version says, "Now listen, my daughter." Boaz isn't really, in a sense, saying, "Don't you hear what I'm saying?" Although it sounds like that when he says, "Hearest thou not, my daughter?" It's not that he's saying, "Don't you hear what I'm saying?" But he's saying, "Listen to what I'm saying." Everything begins with that willingness to hear, and to hear, I guess you could say, with the right attitude. Obedience doesn't come except from a surrendered heart. And otherwise, it's not really true obedience. So he asks her to listen. "Hearest thou not?" I think that's kind of a gentle command. It means, if you look it up, give attention to or give obedience to. That's what it really means. Pay attention to what I'm saying and obey the instructions that I give you here, which are to be faithful and to abide. So what struck me is he says, in the definition, it says to give attention to or give obedience to, if you look it up in Strong's. That means it's a choice that she must make. It's left to her. You can choose to do this. You can choose to give your attention to what I say or give obedience to what I ask. She can go to another field if she wants to. Why would she? I mean, my goodness, this is Boaz's field. But the moment she stays, the moment she gives attention to what he says and renders obedience to his request, the moment that she does that, she becomes his servant and his handmaiden. And the moment she does that, And the moment that happens, she comes under his care and his protection and becomes his responsibility. So until she's willing to do that, he cannot protect her and care for her and provide for her until she's willing to stay, until she's willing to listen, until she's willing to obey. So you see that gentle command, hearest thou not? Or in a sense, Jesus is saying that to us, hearest thou not? And our attitude should be, yes, I hear. I hear and obey. And how does he address her? Hearest thou not what?
My daughter.
My daughter. My daughter. Now, one of the commentators pointed out this probably shows on the surface a age difference between Boaz and Ruth. She is a damsel, a young woman. He is a mighty man of wealth, an owner of fields, and a man of valor, a mature man. He was not like over in chapter 3 and verse 10 when he talks to her about what she has not done. Pleases him is she didn't follow after the young men that were there in the field. So you get the idea that Boaz wasn't a young man. He was a mature man. And so the first thing that he tells her to do, the first command is kind of a gentle command, and then he calls her my daughter, which is kind of a personal command, is to listen. The second thing that he asks her to do is to be faithful. He says, go not to glean in another field, and neither go from hence. You know, that's kind of a dual command. And this is really what listening will enable us to do. Listening that brings obedience will enable us to be faithful. And this request, as I said, is twofold. He says, don't go to glean in another field. Go not to glean in another field. And then he says, neither go from hence or from here. So he's telling her, don't go in another field and don't leave this field. And if she does one, she'll do the other. Isn't that true? If she doesn't go into another field, then she can stay in this field, and she will stay in this field unless she just decides to go home. But the idea is if she doesn't go into another field, then she will be staying here. And actually, this is part of his provision for her. Staying will bring a reward, but the reward won't come unless she stays, unless she's willing to remain under his protection. And her faithfulness will bring forth his faithfulness. If she's faithful to stay and not flit around from field to field, but stay in his fields, then he can be faithful to provide for her and shower her with an abundance of blessings. He asks her to stay in a sense when he says, go not to glean in another field. You get the idea, and some commentators say, you know, when the barley harvest is over, don't go. Stay. Stay until the next harvest, which will be the wheat harvest. Don't worry about, you know, looking for another field. Just stay here. And so you get the idea that he's asking her to stay through the barley harvest, which was March and April, and when it's done, wait for the wheat harvest, which is June and July. So stay until the next crop is ready and just harvest. There'll be something for you if you're willing to stay. And I just thought that's so good in our lives, because sometimes after a period of activity, a flurry of activity, there's this period where it seems like nothing's going on. Well, just stay. And there'll be activity again. There'll be something for you to do. The Lord will give you something to do. He will bless. So you just need to stay. I think people, when they hop from church to church, they go where there's a little bit of activity, and when it looks like it's dying down for a little bit, they go to another place where there's a little bit of activity, and when it dies down, they run to another place. But Boaz says, you know, don't run off to another field. Just stay here, and don't leave, because there'll be something for you to do. And that's a good lesson for our lives. And if you go to the 23rd verse of this second chapter, the very last verse, it says she did this. because verse 23 in chapter 2 says, "So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and of the wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law." So she stayed. And Boaz knew that there was another harvest that was coming. This was just the first of many. And I think what is so striking is she's not going to move on after the barley harvest. She's going to wait for the wheat, but this is an invitation that has been extended to her by Boaz. And I don't know that Boaz maybe extended that invitation to everybody, but he did to her. He invited her to stay. And she has his promise that there will be a provision if she does. There's a present provision if she stays for the barley harvest, and there is a future provision if she stays because there will be another harvest. So she has his promise that there is a provision, both present and future. And in a sense, she has a promise that she will lay hold of at the end of this chapter when it comes to the wheat harvest. She will be laying hold of and partaking of the finest of the wheat. It says that in Psalm 81:16, and it says that in Psalm 147:14. It talks about the finest of the wheat. I'll guarantee you that Boaz's fields were the finest of the wheat. I put down in a note that I wrote to myself that this is what listening will enable us to do, to be faithful, and through that faithfulness to lay hold of the Lord's full provision for us. If you listen, you will be faithful, and as you are faithful, that faithfulness enables you to lay hold of the Lord's full provision, which is what she's about to do. Not just a portion of blessing, but a full blessing. He invites us to stay. The Lord invites us to stay. He invites us to labor. He invited her to labor. And he invites us to partake of his care and his provision. And all we have to do is say, "Yes, Lord, I want that. I need that." And so, can you imagine what this must have felt like to her heart to hear this mighty man of wealth say this to her? Who does he ask her to stay close to? His maidens. By my maidens. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says, "Abide here fast by my maidens." It says the reaping was performed by women, while the sorting of the sheaves was the duty of the men servants. So the women would reap at, or would sort the, the women would reap, and the sorting of the sheaves was the duty of the men. The same division of harvest of labor is still done in Syria today. They still.
Did the women cut down the stuff?
That's what he said. He said the reaping was performed by the women and the sorting of the sheaves. I guess they take that big bulk, you know, and tie them all together and sort them. That took a little bit more strength to do than taking a little sickle and. Yeah, I think that would be pretty hard.
Hard work. Uh-huh. Of course, in those days, that's what people grew up on, was hard work.
Yeah.
But what's whether that's true or not, and what Ruth is doing here, she was just gleaning the leftovers. I don't know, whoever was reaping, and maybe it was a even division of the labor. Maybe if there weren't enough to do one, they shared in that labor.
Women athletes, I mean, when you do something every day, you get pretty strong.
Yeah.
Woman or man, neither one.
Well, and you know, to stay fast by his maidens would be just to follow behind him and pick up whatever they drop.
That's right. You know, to abide by his maidens means to cling to or stay close by or follow close after his maidens, to stay close by them. Now, that's where she's going to get the blessing, because she's going to see what's going to fall. And also she's going to be in close proximity with other women, and she's not going to be off way off and feel lonely all by herself. She's going to be with them. But what I thought about is when he says, "Stay by my maidens, stay close to my maidens," is that she's going to have an opportunity to associate with and fellowship with these maidens. I think they're women her age. She'll have a chance to talk with them and share experiences and talk about Naomi and things in her life. And also, through Boaz's maidens, she'll learn how to better serve him and please him. They've already been there. You know, they know how to do it and the best way to do it and what will please their master Boaz. So if she stays close by them, she'll be learning from them how to serve and how to please Boaz. It's a learning experience, but it's also a time of fellowship. And I thought about, you know, I look back to when I first came to the meeting and Earlene Spickard, I think, was one of these maidens that I followed after and learned from. Don't you look at her in that way? She showed me how to serve by example, and I saw her life and her sacrifice and how she wanted to please the Lord, and that's what I wanted to do. And she was an example of me to follow, like Ruth had maidens set before her to follow. And then Earlene, if you look at her life, she had examples that were set before her to follow. Sister Bodie, Sister Mooneyhan, Sister Morgan. You know, all those women were, in a sense, his maidens that she stayed close to and followed after. And I thought the Lord always will give us somebody to follow after that leads us by example, that shows us how to serve and how to please the Master. And we learn from them, and then as we go on, our lives become examples to others around us. And before we know it, people are looking at us and saying, I'm going to follow after that maiden. And I looked at it in that light. There's a real wonderful practical lesson there for Boaz, to be blessed by her service. When you look at it this way, you can look at it in the light of this. The lesson is to stay and don't stray. Isn't that what it is? Stay and don't stray. Because God's people tend to do that a lot. They flit from here to there. And there are these wonderful truths that he sets forth in this verse: to listen, to be faithful, and to abide. What would your answer be to the question that Jesus would ask if he said, "Hearest thou not, my daughter?" Wouldn't it be, "Yes, I hear. I'm listening." And we're to stay in that field, and I look at that field in a sense in the light of the assembly that the Lord leads us to. You know, that's where you're going to glean and be fed from the wheat and the barley. Growth comes from staying in one place and not jumping from place to place. That may make the flesh feel good, but there's no great spiritual growth unless you can really be established. So she's learning, in a sense, to be faithful in a way that's hard. Just stay and do the job. And from morning till night, until the job is done, and then wait until the next opportunity arises, which would be the wheat, and stay and work from morning till night until the job is done. But she's assembled together with other workers, and she's learning from them and fellowshipping with them and showing forth a testimony that at the end of the harvest is going to speak to everyone. Boaz isn't the only one that sees how she behaves herself. Everybody else will also. At the end of this, she's no longer Ruth the Moabitess. You know, that's forgotten. So to listen is important, and to be faithful is important. If you listen, it teaches you to be faithful. And as you're faithful, it teaches you to abide. You know, that's... To abide means you learn to cling to the Lord. You learn to cling to the Lord's things. You learn to cling to the place that you're fed and you're led. You learn to cling to those that are the true servants of the Lord. You know, think of all the things that we can cling to and abide by just in that statement where she was willing to abide fast, close by his maidens, no other maidens, but his maidens. I think we do this by not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. That's one way that we abide close by. We don't forsake the assembling of ourselves together. We do this by, as the Apostle Paul says in Acts or not the Apostle Paul, but as we saw in Acts 2:42 in the early part of the church, one of the things that it says concerning the believers is they continued steadfastly in what? Anybody remember? In doctrine, fellowship, the breaking of bread, and prayer. You know, that is, in a sense, staying close by or cleaving unto those that are of like mind. I think they were like-minded, Ruth and those maidens. And in a sense, she's learning things that she wouldn't learn otherwise. She learned some things from Ruth, or from Naomi, but, you know, she needs to learn some new lessons. And we learn in one area of our life, but sometimes the Lord takes us on in other areas, and he teaches us other things through other individuals. So she's going to learn from these women, and she'll learn from gleaning in that field. This is what we do when we hold fast to sound words. The Apostle Paul talks about that in 2 Timothy, hold fast to sound words. You know, that's abiding here fast. It's not just physically, but also in what she hears. And I just thought, that's my heart's desire. I want to be like Ruth and make a choice that she does, that when she hears the words of Boaz, she says, yes, I will. I will listen, and I will be faithful, and I will stay here, and I will abide. And